Welcome to the show. I'm Jason Whitlock, and I'll tell you why Jim Harbaugh has no excuse for not winning the Big Ten this year, and why there might actually be a team that's a good fit for Dez Bryant. Speak for Yourself starts now. Ow! Ow! Wednesday, hump day. Happy to be here. Hello and welcome. Cowherd is off, but I'm joined today by Super Bowl champ Seth Joyner, longtime NFL coach Rob Ryan, and the NFL Network's Bucky Brooks. Let's start in the NFL, where two major holdouts continue with Aaron Donald and Khalil Mack still waiting for big new contracts before they show up at camp. But if you're searching for an explanation why the Rams and the Raiders have yet to pay two of the league's most dominant and physical defenders, look no further than the league's new helmet rule and the recent trend of the NFL legislating physicality out of the game. Guys, as I think about this, we're just a couple of weeks away from the start of the NFL season. Arguably, the two best defensive players, you could argue Von Miller's in the mix or whatever, but don't have contracts. Everybody says their demands are outrageous. I think the softening of the NFL is starting to undervalue these defensive players. We're seeing safeties get cut. We're, you know, unless you're a top-flight cornerback, I don't know who's getting paid anymore right now. I think the softening of the league is starting to devalue defensive players, and I think it's a shame.
Part of that may be true, but the other thing to take into consideration is both of these players are still under contract, and the team holds the leverage. When the regular season rolls around, are these guys going to sit at home and forfeit checks? Probably not. The teams understand that and they know that. Now, the devaluing of franchise defensive players, there's some validity there. But I would say in the opposite direction, it's even more important now to have guys like this on your team. Consider this. Since 2000, there have been 125 quarterbacks to pass for 4,000 yards in a season. Over that span, there were eight quarterbacks that threw for 5,000 yards. Now, you got to go prior to that time, there were 38 in the history of the league that threw for 4,000 yards, and only one, Dan Marino, that threw for 5,000 yards. It's my opinion that you have to have a pass rush. You have to have guys that can dominate the line of scrimmage in order to stop teams now, because all the rules are slanted toward the success of offenses.
Yeah, I mean, I agree 100% with you, Seth. I mean, look, these guys are two of the most dominant players. They're not going to get affected by this helmet rule because they're tackling quarterbacks and things like that. The guys who get affected with this rule will probably be defensive backs, guys in the secondary.
And linebackers.
Yeah, and linebackers out in space. But these guys are dominant football players in any generation. And to me, it's strange. Like, you're right. They do, you know, the team does hold all the leverage. There's only been a couple of holdouts, and unfortunately, remember the Chicago Bears had Al Harris and Todd Bell hold out, and they missed out on the greatest defensive season in a Super Bowl and things like that. So, you know, hopefully that doesn't happen. Hopefully Donald jumps back in there with Mack and they get paid, because I think they're great football players. They tilt the field for you. You know, as a defensive coach, they give you a chance because nobody can block them one-on-one consistently. So you need difference makers on defense as well.
I think you do need difference makers, but I think we can just follow the money in the offseason. I think teams are deciding to build their teams around passers, pass catchers, and offensive playmakers. All the money's going to quarterbacks, yeah, wide receivers, and these hybrid running backs that can catch the ball out the backfield. And in spite of these dominant defenders, when I look at this list, eight defenders in the top 30 in terms of money, only two of those guys were on playoff teams, Fletcher Cox and Justin Houston. And so when we talk about impact in the game, the pass rush is significant, but I just don't know if you're getting the value back from pass rushers when you look at the way the game is trending.
Aaron Donald is more than a pass rusher. He's a total defensive disruptor. He makes your pass rush. He makes your run game. The trend, eight of the top 30 players or defensive players in terms of paid players, the trend is like the NFL is becoming an 11-man arena version of football. And if you think of arena football, you would know the name of the quarterback and the receivers. You'd know virtually no one that was a defensive player in arena football. Right. And if we're headed that direction, I mean, when I think about why I fell in love with the game, it was the stories about Dick Butkus.
Yeah.
And some of the great defensive players. That's what made the offensive players great. If you're not facing great resistance and great players on the other side who are hyped up, this saddens me.
It's trends, though. You got to follow the trends. And I get your point, Bucky, about following the money. But, you know, it was just two, three, four years ago where, you know, the running back position had got devalued. Oh, you can get a running back in the fifth or sixth round. Oh, you can get, you know, three running backs to do. Todd Gurley flipped that on his head. You know, Ezekiel Elliott is flipping that on his head. I think that the running back position, you know, Saquon Barkley being drafted number two overall, flipped that theory on his head. So it's just a matter of time before things come full circle because, you know, you're right. The NFL is a copycat league, and teams will see, you know, what great teams like New England is doing when they traded off Chandler.
Yeah, like they don't have any marquee defenders. They're just throwing it all over the yard.
They don't care. They don't care. But at some point in time, it'll come back to roost because when teams start scoring 40, 45 points a game, defenders are going to the defensive side of the ball is going to look at that and be like, man, we got to do something.
And they're taking away all the tools to do so. They've taken intimidation out of the game.
Oh, that's by elimination. Exactly.
All right, to the helmet rule itself, which has been so overcalled this preseason that everyone from Richard Sherman to Vikings head coach Mike Zimmer have taken their complaints about it public. Now another coach, Sean McVay, has added his voice to the chorus of concern over the new rule.
The thing that is really going to be interesting that you talk to the officials and you talk to coaches around the league is how do you officiate the bang-bang type plays when a guy is trying to keep his head out of it and at the last second that target ends up changing based on just the speed at which this game is played? And then also some of those things as far as, all right, well, if you're really trying to see it in live action, sometimes it's not as exactly as you perceive it, and not being able to replay those plays unless it leads to somebody being ejected is really tough because some of these 15-yard penalties might be the difference in winning and losing games, and it's such a competitive league.
All right, part of me wants to move on from discussing the helmet rule because the NFL seems determined to go this route. And so it's one of those deals where if you can't beat them, join them. And if they're going this route, if we're just going to soften up the league and it's going to be arena football, I need to quit complaining about it and just accept it. But it's almost impossible for me to do that. And so I want to ask you guys, don't talk as former players, don't talk as a former coach, just as fans, should everyone move on from this helmet deal and discussion and just accept this is the way the game is headed?
I will say this, come September 6th, the first game of the season, okay, the Philadelphia Eagles versus the Atlanta Falcons, if an adjustment by the NFL has not been made by that point in time, then the media, the fans, the players, the coaches, they need to just go ahead and move on and play the game. And whatever happens, happens. You know, if you get called, you get called. If you don't, you don't. Because talking about it and complaining about it is not going to change. If the NFL doesn't make this adjustment pre-first game of the season, then, you know, it is what it is. And there's nothing that our conversation or anybody's conversation, even McVay's conversation, is going to do to change the reality that this rule could possibly be here to stay.
Yeah, and if the rule is here to stay in its current form, I think defensive coaches have to coach their guys up and they just have to play. Because at the end of the day, they've made it very, very difficult to dislodge the ball from wide receivers. They've made it where anyone can venture across the middle without fear. I think the teams that are going to be the really good defensive teams, they're going to tell their guys, hey, take your shot. Because you have to discourage people from throwing down the middle of the field. You have to make it a physical game. And if you get some penalties early, I think it's almost like when Arkansas was really good in basketball under Nolan Richardson and they hacked you on every play. I just can't believe that they're going to call every big hit a penalty. I think you have to impose your will on the offense.
Right. I mean, you know, professional sports has always been about the most physical teams. I mean, that's just the truth. I remember we were in New England. We didn't do much. All we got, you know, all this. We went, never had any flashy players at the time. All we did was win a Super Bowl. But we out-physicaled every team that we played. And I think it's the same. And the bottom line is, I just don't think I'm going to give the NFL more credit. Like when they called all that pass interference in the preseason, mm-hmm. It was the worst looking stuff. I'd turn the game off myself if I'm watching preseason because it was just disgusting. Every play was a penalty. I think they've got to change this rule. They've got to look at it. Go back to spearing. Okay, call the spearing and all that, and all that. You know, just keep the game. You know, tackle is important to do. You've got to be able to get a guy on the ground. You already don't practice it enough, so it's a losing art. But you know, let's not compound a good form tackle and call that a penalty. Then you're going to make it almost impossible to cover.
Rob, you said something that made me think that we're all dinosaurs and we're in denial. You said all professional sports have been about physicality and imposing your will.
Hockey, basketball, all of them.
I get it. But just think about basketball. You can't hand check. You can't play the way you used to play in the 80s. You can't the physical hard fouls. They've eliminated that from basketball. If you even go to Major League Baseball, you can't play the way Pete Rose used to play. You can't
running over the catcher and all that other stuff.
You can't do that anymore. And so you made the point, I think, maybe inadvertently, but it's across all sports, things keep getting softer and softer and softer. And maybe we're all just a group of dinosaurs
What happened is you touched on it at the end of the last segment, talking about the intimidation factor. And then Bucky just touched on it a second ago. You got to understand, for the defensive players, intimidation is a big part of the game.
Yeah.
Because if I can get in a receiver's head or a running back's head or a tight end's head and make him think twice about coming across there catching that ball, that helps me. Because I don't know where they're going. I don't know what the play route, what the route is. I don't know what the snap count is. So the advantage for me is intimidation. And the league looks like it's set on trying to eliminate that from the game of football. Now you see wide receivers running across the middle. They don't even bother to look to see where the defenders are. In my day, they'd be running across looking like this, trying to figure out where they was going to get clocked from. These guys aren't afraid to get hit. And so, that's not a good thing, you know, for the defensive side of the ball.
I think the one thing that can change it is we can eliminate the gentleman's agreement that we used to play with. Back in the day, we used to say, hey, we'll hit you high, but we won't hit you low.
Right.
So that would be the thing. You would respect everybody because guys were like, hey, just don't take out my knees. Well, now the intimidation factor may come from the hits chopping guys at the knees. When we saw T.J. Ward take out a Rob Gronkowski. You don't want to see your stars eliminated, but the one thing you can do to put a little fear in a receiver's mind, chop him down low when he's going across the middle. That will change the way they venture inside the number.
All right, welcome back. Seth Joyner, Rob Ryan, and Bucky Brooks are back. Let's move to New England, which may be what still unemployed Dez Bryant is trying to do. After striking out with the Browns, Dez appears to be buttering up Bill Belichick and Tom Brady on social media, praising the coach's strategic mind as one in a million and replying to a fan that Tom Brady has always been his favorite player. Dez, nice try, but we all remember your Twitter rampage a few weeks ago. I think Dez Bryant burned himself up. I think Dez Bryant still thinks of himself as a number one receiver. I think the Patriots have had a lot of success with rehabilitating players, but they've also had some failures. Ocho Cinco didn't work. Albert Haynesworth didn't work. You can't cure everybody, and I just don't think you can fix Dez Bryant. I don't think the Patriots, he can butter him up all he wants. If I was Bill Belichick, I'd pass on that popcorn.
If there is one organization that can make this work, it's the Patriots. Because Bill Belichick is going to sit down with Dez Bryant when he comes in, and there's going to be an understanding before there's any contract signed, okay? And I say this about older wide receivers. The Arizona Cardinals did it. As Larry Fitzgerald got older, what did they do? They moved him in the slot.
You're comparing Dez to Larry Fitzgerald.
No, I'm just the analogy is that when you get older and you lose speed on the outside against elite one and two cornerbacks is that you move him in the slot where he can. And can you imagine Dez Bryant in the slot, Bucky, with his physicality against a number three cornerback? I mean, that would be a win all day long. Because if he's running option routes, and even the physical side of it, when that guy's trying, that little 185-pound number three cornerback is trying to tackle him, he's going to get beat down. I mean, this would be a good situation. I just don't know after Julian Edelman comes back what the remedy
is. You got to know the whole route tree.
Yeah, you got to hold on. So that's part of the reason I don't think this is a good fit. The complexity of the offense, the post-snap reads, reading coverage on the run, the adjustments. Ocho Cinco struggled picking up the offense, never grasped it. That's why it didn't work. Now, I don't know Dez's aptitude, but I would want it. In Dallas, they never moved him around. So it leads me to believe that there's some rigidity in his game. I just don't know if he's adaptable and versatile enough to play in New England, because they ask you to wear a lot of different hats when you're wide receiver.
Yeah, the one thing is being there in New England, I know the one thing that they want core characteristics. And the number one being, you got to love football. You have to love it, or those guys just don't work out. So Albert Haynesworth, nobody here thinks he loved football. He loved money, but he took off. Like, you know, some guys just aren't going to work. But a guy that genuinely loves football, they'll work with, they'll find a role. Dez Bryant loves football. I swear, I've been around him. I know he loves football. All right, so it'd be crazy to think, well, he can go to New England. It'd be crazy to think he could play on the slot, because he doesn't run those routes. He's never shown that he runs any option routes. But I understand he could slap those the guys around and get open. But the one thing I know is New England is so well coached, they could take a big guy like this and do something with him. And I think Dez loves football enough, he would try it. Now, am I shocked that he's not in the league? Yeah, he should have taken the Baltimore job. Man, he'd be a perfect fit out there. Mm-hmm. I don't know why he didn't. Cleveland, he probably, you know, they probably wanted to sign him, and I don't know, he moved on. But I think New England's taken players late in preseasons and have won Super Bowls with them. Brian Cox, Roman Pfeiffer, they all came in late with about a week to go in training camp, and we won a Super Bowl. And they played huge roles. Brian Cox was an amazing leader, the best I've been around, to watch him take over our defense and turn a kind of an average defense into one of the toughest units in the league. And it was because of him. Dez Bryant, I'm not saying, hey, I don't think he could get grasped any of Josh McDaniels, half of his offense, but I know he can still go outside and catch a football and be a good target.
I love your point about loving the game, because Dez Bryant certainly does love the game. But I think the other just core ingredient they have, particularly on offense, everything comes down to trust. Are you going to be where you're supposed to be on time and prepared? And I'm talking about during a play.
Right.
And Tom Brady relies on, he trusts his wide receivers. You're going to make the right read. I'm going to put the ball here. And that's where I think Dez Bryant is a real wild card, and why he wouldn't be a fit in New England is because I just don't think Tom Brady would ever be able to trust him. And it's not because he's a disloyal guy. It's because I'm just not sure he'll know what to do. I think they played him on the outside and played him in one spot in Dallas for a reason. If you're versatile enough to do other things, you tend to do it.
No, that's not true. I mean, if a guy's a number one, he's a number one. He's either an X or he's a Y. That's just the nature of the beast. If they were smart, they would have moved him around and moved him inside. Because, listen, if he can't win at the line of scrimmage, what do? You put him in motion. You got a guy running with him. So now you got a two-way go. You get creative. Mm-hmm. You know, Dallas hasn't been creative in their offensive thinking for a long time. They sat back and let, you know, a defensive end, Claiborne, destroy them last year with six sacks without putting a tight end over there or without moving a running back over there. So you would expect for them to make that adjustment for Dez? No. But Belichick and Josh McDaniels will make that adjustment. And if you put him in the slot, it's so simple. If the slot is lined up inside, you press him in and option out. If he's lined up outside, you press him in, you option him out. If you're in man, playing inside out, you're running away, you zone, set it down. That's simple. If I can think that in my mind, you're going to tell me that Dez Bryant can't adapt to that?
You just made the best argument for Dez Bryant in terms of blowing up Jason Garrett's handling of their offense in Dallas, and they have had some problems. You've made a good point. It's worth taking a look under the hood if I was the New England Patriots.
Hey, listen, they brought Randy Moss in. Randy was 30.
He ain't Randy Moss.
Okay,
he ain't Randy.
But he has some problems like Randy Moss.
Because Randy Moss he can rely on doing one thing.
No, I get that, but Dez is 29.
I think they bring him in after the cuts are made.
Yeah.
Because now you're not obligated to pay him a whole year's salary. If he gets in there after the cuts are made, he comes in. Hey, he looks great, great. You got him all year. But if he doesn't, it costs you absolutely nothing. You're getting Edelman back week four anyway.
All right, welcome back. Bucky Brooks is here, and we're joined now by Fox College football guru Joel Klatt and the founder of the Big League, Jason McIntyre. All right, let's move to college football, where Jim Harbaugh just named Ole Miss transfer Shea Patterson his starting quarterback after a disappointing first couple of years at the helm in Ann Arbor. Harbaugh now has what many people think is the best quarterback in the Big Ten, maybe in the country. And with rival Ohio State dealing with the Urban Meyer controversy, I think the conference is Harbaugh's for the taking, and I think he needs to take it to justify the hype that people like Joel Klatt and Colin
Do you want to know why I'm laughing?
And Jason McIntyre.
Do you want to know why I'm laughing?
What?
Your narrative in that eloquent lead of his underperforming first few years at Michigan. Really?
Yes.
Underperforming? You know what was underperforming? Brady Hoke's tenure at Michigan. And your defense of Brady Hoke because of the Ball State connection is obvious right now. Jim Harbaugh is exponentially a better coach, and Michigan is exponentially better off right now than they were under Brady Hoke.
Did I miss something?
No, no. I was just pointing something out from your lead.
Let me go read the prompt again, because Joel's on a different
topic. You said it. I'm going to tailor the topic to you. I read it with you.
Is Jim Harbaugh better than Brady Hoke? Joel?
Well, I know, but you threw a shot in your lead. You threw a shot in your lead. Underperforming in his first. What was underperforming about his first few seasons?
He's got the same.
The 10 wins?
He's got the same.
Was the 10 wins
two
underperforming?
Two 10-win seasons.
Two? Oh, two.
That's more than Brady Hoke and Rich Rod combined.
Oh, remember when he was a dropped punt snap and a botched spot away from playing for a national title? Oh, because I remember that. That wasn't underperforming for me.
Do you remember when... You know, I sent a DM to Tamron Hall and thought I was this close to marrying her. Do you remember that? It didn't happen.
I'm pretty sure Michigan was closer to the playoff than you were in that DM
horseshoes.
Conversation.
You do realize he's got the same conference record as Northwestern during his time back in the Big Ten.
Okay.
I don't think that was the expectation.
And what division is Northwestern in?
They're in the Big Ten. They're in the Big Ten.
Are they in the West or the East, Jason?
They're in the Big Ten Conference.
They're in the West, which is exponentially a weaker division than the Big Ten East. These are all just facts. Listen, I mean, I don't know what you want me to... They're better in wins and losses. They're better in offense. They're better in defensive statistics than they were before Jim Harbaugh got there.
Oh.
And the fact remains, this is a media-driven narrative that he is underperforming at Michigan. He is not underperforming. Michigan was drastically underperforming under Rich Rodriguez and Brady Hoke. They made a change, and they're much better off.
I love Joe, but I'm going to go to Jason McIntyre.
Please.
Maybe he'll answer my question.
Yeah,
Can I answer the question?
Fire.
Should he win the Big Ten Conference this year with Shea Patterson and the best quarterback in the conference? Is he not due to justify the hype? Should he not win the Big Ten Conference?
I looked at the schedule, and it's one of the toughest in the country. They play 5 ranked teams that are in the top 15. They open at Notre Dame. This is a brutal schedule. Even if he has the best quarterback in the conference, it's going to be a tough road for Harbaugh. But, Jason, I'll say this. If I'm a football program or an NFL team and I need to turn things around, there's one guy I call, Jim Harbaugh. He did it at Stanford. Okay, they had never had a top 5 finish in over 60 years. What does he do in year 4? Gets him a top 5 finish. He goes to the 49ers, Jason. 8 years, no playoffs. What happens? NFC title game right out of the gate.
Wait, what? Really?
Super Bowl the next year. This guy fixes programs. This is what he does. And again, Joel already talked about
let me go back
how
to the
improved
again.
They are.
I want to just start over
See,
again.
See, here's the thing is you're trying
this
to, you're trying to
about
throw
the
out.
Big Ten
I understand. And the question was derived from you because you want to throw out some sort of metric that will prove once and for all that he's overrated. He may or may not win the Big Ten. I don't think that his job depends on it, nor does his reputation depend on it. Mm. Ohio State's incredibly talented, Michigan State's incredibly talented. They won 10 games last year, bring 19 starters back. Penn State is incredibly talented. By the way, you compared James Franklin to Jim Harbaugh. James Franklin was a 500 coach before Saquon Barkley and Joe Moorhead took over that offense, and all of a sudden the last 2 years they were world beaters and they won a Big Ten championship. Now he doesn't have either of those guys, so we'll see with James Franklin. I'm just saying, I think your narrative is completely off. I don't know if they win the conference, Bucky, but Michigan's going to be a really good football team. You know how I know that? Because Jim Harbaugh is a really good football coach.
He is a really good football coach, but they're paying him a lot of money to win championships. And when I'm looking at this 0-3 against Ohio State, 1-2 against Michigan State, 1-1 against Wisconsin, I mean, you're paying the coach who is supposed to take you over the top to win big games.
Yep.
And he hasn't won big games. And I think the bigger thing is, We all believe that he was a guy that was a quarterback whisperer based on what he did with Colin Kaepernick. He was going to take someone, anybody that Michigan threw out and make them better. And we haven't seen that.
Even that
and,
first and year this, with Jake Rudock.
Yeah.
We felt like, wow, I mean, he's doing this with anybody.
So now we get an opportunity. He has a legitimate quarterback. He has Shea Patterson. Shea Patterson, to me, is a real dude. I don't know if he's the best one in the conference, but he's a legitimate playmaker, a legitimate starter. Jim Harbaugh has to get Michigan over the hump based on the amount of money he's paid and the expectations that come with that. If not, I'm disappointed as a Michigan fan.
The biggest question surrounding Michigan is not whether Jim Harbaugh can get them to the next level or not. It's whether their offensive tackles are going to protect the quarterback. That's literally the only question mark surrounding this team. It's going to be a top five defense in the country. Their run game should be very good with the stable of running backs that they have. They're more talented at wide receiver than they've been in quite some time. I think Kalik Hudson could be the Big Ten Defensive Player of the Year, and that's even in a conference with Nick Bosa. So we'll see.
If those tackles protect
the quarterback, they could have a special year. If the tackles develop, I wouldn't be shocked if they're in the playoff.
Let me see if I understand what Joel thinks the conversation in Ann Arbor is. That they're not talking about Jim Harbaugh finally delivering a Big Ten title, beating Ohio State with all that controversy they're in, beating Michigan State. You think the people in Ann Arbor are talking about the offensive tackle?
Let me ask you, are they better off now than they were under Brady Hoke? That's a yes or no question. That's a yes or no question.
Joel, you know, tomorrow...
I'm just asking.
That'll be our second topic here, Brady Hoke. I'm not arguing Brady Hoke. That's over and in the past.
Are they better off?
We'll see this year.
We will, right, because I think they've been exponentially better
off. Right now, he seems to be going the same direction Brady Hoke
because
was.
Because all of his quarterbacks got injured and they lost a few games at the end of the season?
No one else had quarterback injuries? No one else in the world has ever played two quarterbacks? I've seen Urban Meyer make magic with his third and fourth string quarterbacks. That's who Jim Harbaugh's supposed to be. Didn't Urban Meyer with Cardale Jones, the third string guy, win a national championship?
Good for him.
Supposed to cry because Jim Harbaugh, the quarterback whisperer?
I'm not saying that you got to cry. I think that your narrative is overblown.
First, do you think
he's overrated? Everything that you've said suggests
that. What is his reputation?
Let me explain what my narrative is. My narrative is that Jim Harbaugh was paid a lot of money to win Big Ten titles. My narrative is that Jim Harbaugh was supposed to be so much better than Brady Hoke. My mind was supposed to be blown.
America.
And I was supposed to look at results and go, Brady Hoke never could have done this.
He couldn't.
He hasn't done anything at Michigan so far that Brady Hoke didn't do while he was there.
Stop. Come on. Now it's like I'm playing cards with my brother's kids. What are we doing?
What has he done that Brady Hoke didn't do while he was there?
Are you serious?
Yeah.
The 10 wins don't matter.
Brady Hoke won 11 his first year.
Ohio State for the division doesn't matter.
He hasn't won the big... They went 8-5 last year, Joel.
Okay. In your world, Brady Hoke, Jim Harbaugh, same. Got it.
That's not what I believe.
That's what you just said.
Brady Hoke has not had
the coaching
career.
I shut my book because facts and reason don't matter in an argument with the unreasonable.
All right, let's move to Alabama, where the Crimson Tide are once again the preseason number one, even though nobody knows who their starting quarterback is going to be. Nick Saban says he's not ready to decide between Jalen Hurts and touchdown Tua, saying the competition between the two has been neck and neck. Now, I feel more comfortable now talking about an Alabama program and an Alabama head coach who actually has justified the hype. And that's why I don't second guess a guy like Nick Saban, who's won 5 national titles, has 5 rings, and every year, whether it's Tua, whether it's Jalen Hurts, he's right there in the national title hunt. This is a coach who's justified the hype. And so, no, I don't believe that Jalen Hurts is the equal of Tua, but I believe in Nick Saban and his ability to put these two guys in a competition that will bring out the best in Tua.
And Bucky might know better than all of us that it really doesn't matter who their quarterback is, and it's because of what's around them. And they are the NFL factory in college football. I believe it was 8 draft picks last year, 4 in the first round. They do this year in and year out. In fact, in each of the last 2 years, they had 4 first-round draft picks. You're a guy that evaluates all those players. So regardless of if it's Jalen or Tua, and I think both might play, to be quite honest, whether it's via their play or via their injuries, potentially, I think both will play this year. But again, Bucky, that team around him that he's assembled, it's always so good.
It's fantastic. And the thing about Jalen Hurts is, I'll say this, he plays winning football. And we can knock him for not being a precise passer. 26-2 during his career, doesn't turn the ball over. He's a great leader by all accounts, and he does just enough for them to win games. It's not flashy, it's not spectacular, but it's enough for them to be effective. And Tua, you have the opportunity to really expand their passing game. Tua is a special passer. He's a playmaker. He also is a great leader. I think for Nick Saban, it comes down to comfort level.
Yeah.
What does he want this team to be? How does he want it to look? If he wants it to be the blue-collar workman-like team, Jalen Hurts is going to be a guy. But if he hopes for better, I think Tua is going to be the guy that can get
them. It's a little comical, though, to call them equals. I mean, a Vegas sportsbook has Tua as the favorite to win the Heisman. He played one half of football, essentially, in a bunch of garbage time last year. I mean, I think Tua is going to be the guy. I do have some reservations about what Saban's doing here. But I also wonder.
What are your reservations?
Well, I mean, the team
going
is a Jalen. Yeah, you
go
in with two. Like, the team has known Jalen Hurts. He's been the guy, basically, running that show. Tua comes in and blows everybody away. You got a young kid. I know you know him a little bit, right? And,
yeah.
And I just wonder about a possible ego situation. Again, any kid that gets a lot, you win a national championship playing a half, you throw an amazing pass in overtime, does it go to his head too much, beats out a veteran to win the job? You know, we'll see what happens.
It'll be interesting. I will tell you, that aspect we haven't seen at a Saban team, right? Like, mm-hmm. the personalities from within the team, we haven't seen that. So if that takes place, that'll be interesting. Jason, the one thing I'm most interested in, Bucky hit on it a little briefly, is the nature with which they play. Because Saban likes control.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he doesn't want mistakes. He doesn't like to live with mistakes. See, he had to live with the mistakes in the national championship game that Tua made because he had his chips already in the middle of the table. Like, he played his cards, and he had to live with it at that point. So the interception, the sack on first down, he was pulling his hair out. But that's – what happens when that – if mm-hmm. that happens in the regular season now, I'm thinking to myself, is Saban a guy that's just going to sit there – and watch reckless play? Not suggesting that Tua is going to play reckless, but it's something to watch for. Just the style with which these guys play on the field.
And this, again, very seriously, this is why I like the way that he's handling this in terms of, I think he knows Tua. Tua is a great kid.
Sure.
I think he has some self-awareness for a young person, some real humility for a young person, despite the success. But making him earn this job in training camp, I think it's important probably for the rest of the team. You just don't hand Jalen Hurts' job away. You make some guy, you can't win it in a half, even in a game as important as the national championship. And so he's making the guy earn it during the regular season. The thing I loved, and we'll end on this note, is how you credited Nick Saban for doing what Jim Harbaugh can't do. He built a team that it doesn't matter who the quarterback is, he's going to compete for national championship.
I love how he's just like, and we'll end on this note.
He's built.
I'm just going to get one.
He's built a complete football team like Urban Meyer does at Ohio State, James Franklin at Penn State, Paul Christ in Wisconsin. And hopefully this year we'll see it in Michigan. I
mean, listen, we'll see. We'll see. And if he underperforms, I'll be the first to say it. But he's certainly
Brady Hoke built a dominant team at Ball State and San Diego State. Dominant.
Oh.
All right, welcome back to the show. Seth Joyner, Rob Ryan, and Bucky Brooks are back. Let's return to the NFL. I wish I had my Twitter off available, where Eric Reed's collusion case against the NFL might have just had a wrench thrown in it, with his old coach Kyle Shanahan saying the 49ers are interested in bringing him back to the team as a backup. I think Shanahan is for real. And while Reed's longtime protest partner Colin Kaepernick was never willing to take a backup role, I think it would be a huge mistake for Reed to follow suit. Look, there's a way to be suspicious of Kyle Shanahan's comments. This could just be providing cover for the NFL in their collusion case. However, I don't believe it is. I think that Eric Reed is probably at this point a backup safety. And I think that there have been other teams, the Cincinnati Bengals tried to reach out to him, and hell, clearly they just cut their safety. He had a chance to be the starter there, but he wouldn't tell them what they wanted to hear about the national anthem. I think Eric Reed has talked himself out of an NFL job, and if he were wise, he'd go take this one-year deal at the NFL minimum, $800,000, and play for the 49ers.
Disingenuous is what this is, okay? Don't tell me that all of a sudden you want the guy to come back when you tried to restructure him and he said no, and you made a decision to cut him, and now you got another guy that's going to be the starter, and now you're saying, okay, I'll have him come back to be a backup. Well, first of all, the guy's been a starter all these years. He don't want to be a backup. Obviously, he thought he was better than the other guy that you chose. So now you're going to create that kind of dissension in your DB room? That's nonsense, man. This is purely about the whole collusion situation. Because he knows that Eric Reed ain't coming back there. He knows that. Because the guy wants to be a starter, plain and simple. So let's just call it what it is.
Well, I mean,
his comments, along with John Elway's comments last week about Colin Kaepernick, and I'm gonna leave it at that before I get your blood pressure up.
Well, the only thing is with Reed is, look, he turned down San Francisco's original offer,
yeah,
which is probably similar to what the one they want to make now. All right, then he turns down Cincinnati. Like, there's only so many jobs in the National Football League. All right. You're a football player. You need to take him. Okay, I think the young man he's aligned himself to take the money and run if he can get it. Maybe he's a politician now, because if you're a football player, you want an opportunity to play. This thing, I see himself as a starter. Look, he was a good football player. But now, okay, the market's not there to get that starting job. Well, how about be a backup and earn your keep? He had opportunities. And it's like, why isn't he taking them now? It's late in the deal. And if you could get a guaranteed salary, basically, if you get on the roster now before a couple of the cuts are made, I don't understand. So I understand, hey, I want more money than this. Well, I tell you what, as being out of the football league myself, something's better than zero. Like, I'm just telling you, get in.
Would you like to be a defensive coordinator this
Absolutely.
Year?
I'd take a defensive job. I'll humble myself. I'll go back to be an assistant coach. Absolutely, on a great day. I'd love it, because I know I believe in myself, and I'm a football coach. I'm not a player, but I'm a coach. And apparently, this guy isn't now a player. He wants to be a politician.
I think the big thing for Eric Reed, last year they moved him from safety and dropped him in the box. He was a hybrid linebacker for them. When you ask people to look at his play, they worry about some of the physicality and toughness. Is he tough enough to be a headhunter down in the box? The 49ers just signed his backup, Jawarski Tartt, to an extension, 2 years, $13 million. So Eric Reed has to know, going back to the room, he's going to have to be the veteran playmaker that comes in on sub packages. Is he willing to do it? But if he is serious about getting a job and playing in the league, he has to take this, because he didn't take the Cincinnati deal. He turned this one down before. Something happened where his plane was canceled on the way to Tennessee. At some point, you're going to run out of chances. If he wants to play, he has to take this one.
Seth, I'm going to give you the final word if you have one.
Hey, listen, there's no doubt in my mind the guy wants to play. Sometimes it comes down to the situation being the right situation. We've had this conversation about Nick Foles, and Nick Foles said, you know what, hey, I'm not leaving Philadelphia to just go and take a job somewhere. It has to be the right situation for me, because I've made that mistake one time by coming to the Rams and almost being pushed out of the league.
I'm not even going to respond to that.
Okay,
Cleveland, where last year's winless wonders, the Browns, are apparently attracting a ton of action in Vegas, with a lot of people actually betting on Hugh Jackson's Hard Knock squad to win the AFC North. This is completely ridiculous. They won one game last year. Somehow the over-under on them is 5.5. It should be like 3 or 4. This is crazy.
I think that they're a team on the rise. Mm-hmm. I believe in, you know, the changes that they've made, the players that they have on this team. If I was a betting man right now, I probably could get 20-1 in Vegas. I put a grand on them to go 8-8 this year.
They won zero games.
I don't care.
One in the last 2 years.
Yeah, but man, you already lost 100 to me yesterday. But I think there's a reason why all those buildings are out in Vegas, and it's for people like this taking bets on this. Look, I like the players they've added too. I really do. But man, I just don't see, like, you're in there with Pittsburgh, but don't forget about Baltimore.
I know.
Their defense with Martindale is coming on. They
Harbaugh's
look great again.
Harbaugh's coaching for his life.
Yeah, and, I mean, I like him in Cincinnati. Marvin's always sneaky, so I don't know. It's a hard order. It's a hard thing to believe people are lining up out there to put these
– don't get me confused. I'm not saying they're going to win the division. But they're going to be an 8-8 team next year.
I think they're going to be in the mix. I see the division a little differently because I believe Pittsburgh is coming back to the pack. I believe their defense is vulnerable. I don't know if Big Ben is going to play at a high level. And Lev Bell is going to make business decisions all year because he wants to get the payday at the end of the year. When I look at the two other teams, Cincinnati and Baltimore, I'm not in love with Joe Flacco. And if they put Lamar Jackson on the field, you've said that he can't play the quarterback position. I just think things are lining up for Cleveland to make it very, very interesting. Not as a division winner, but I could see them maybe vault up to number two.
I almost think that John Dorsey is doing – he's out there betting up expectations for Cleveland so he has an excuse to fire Hugh. If Vegas said we should win 8 games. And when Hugh only wins 3 or 4, oh, what a failure this is. People thought the division was vulnerable. I'm sorry, but Big Ben is allegedly in the best shape he's been in the past 5 or 6 years. Mike Tomlin, there's low pressure on him. I think he's going to perform well. I think Joe Flacco is going to perform well, and I think John Harbaugh and Baltimore, because John Harbaugh is coaching for his life. It's Ozzie Newsom's last year. 8 wins just – if they did that, Hugh Jackson should be coach of the year, and we should bring Joel Klatt back to talk about Hugh Jackson the way he does Jim Harbaugh. All right. All right, welcome back. Seth joined us here for Last Call. Let's move to the Big 3, where the championship is the only thing making news this week, with Kobe Bryant's reps denying a report yesterday that the Mamba would join Ice Cube's league next year. Seth, what do you think is more likely, Kobe playing in the Big 3 or rejoining the Lakers?
And LeBron? I don't think either one. I think Kobe's one of those guys that, you know, when he decided to hang his basketball sneakers up, it was forever. As great as the Big 3 is and as intriguing as it looks for him to come back and play with LeBron, I think he's done. Listen, I mean, he just made 30 times his investment, you know, on body armor. What in the world he need to go back and subject himself to basketball for?
Ultimate competitor. The great ones never really retire. They always think they could do it. I still think there's a chance he plays with the Lakers. All right, to Pittsburgh, where everyone in the Steelers organization has been raving about Ben Roethlisberger's new workout regimen this preseason. Big Ben's been talking about retirement the last couple of seasons, but it looks like he's got a new level of commitment. Seth, do you expect a different Big Ben this year?
Well, it seems like Tom Brady has motivated him in some way. I expect it. You know, you put the work in, you're supposed to get the results. The only question I have is, what took so long?
Big Ben made a fool of himself last year, and he needs a big year this year to repair his reputation. My favorite player. I'm glad to see him do it.